Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Eurosport commentary box, where James Whittam and me, Greg Haynes, we've just finished our first World Superbike commentary of the 2020 season. I was hoping we were going to get three different winners this weekend, and we have. It couldn't have been any better for the championship, could it?
No, the best start to any season that I can remember. Just brilliant, brilliant racing. We've got to be a little bit careful because Phillip Island is, as a circuit, there's lots of things that make it different. It works tyres very differently to most places. That means that riders can't take off and go and lap as quick as they want. It means that they've got to stay together a little bit. And we've seen really good racing here before. But I really think it bodes well for the championship. I think that not only has that played its part, the tyre war at Phillip Island has made for close racing in the past. But this time, we've also got, I think, a little bit of parity in terms of machinery. The rules have stayed the same for the last couple of three seasons. That means that teams and manufacturers can work to those rules. The performance parts are filtering down to the private teams from the factory teams, which they must do within the rules. And I just think we're coming up to a good time for World Superbike. The feeling is palpable that that is the case in the paddock.
Yeah, because the last few years we've had spit throttle bodies were outlawed and other sorts of technical changes, haven't we? Adjustable rev limits, three races per weekend. They spit the Saturday, Sunday races. The reverse grid came and then went after 2 years. So yeah, even on the sporting side, there's been a lot of changes.
Exactly. It just feels like they've been clutching at straws as to how we can, you know, artificially make it exciting, because the racing on track wasn't that exciting. But actually, in my opinion, the technical staff, including Scott Smart, who seems to be the main brains behind the way the tech regs go, has done a really good job. And when they make a rule change, a major rule change in terms of the rules of how you can run your bike, what you can run, and how you can tune your bike and what parts you can use, it's going to take a little bit of time for people to get on board with that and make a bike that is competitive, and I think it's starting to work. I didn't see a deal of difference in top speeds. Honda was really quick. That's one thing I did notice for a bike that's brand new at the beginning of a development process. The Honda was quickest through the speed traps, and we know the Ducati's quick, but nothing else was. The rest of the bikes weren't too far behind. It wasn't night and day. It was good.
Yeah, Bautista, 329 kilometres an hour maximum speed.
That is 203.5 miles an hour.
Unbelievable, isn't it? But one thing Bautista's been saying over the last few days, he's been joking about it, but he's saying it's almost as though we've got too much power. So what does he actually mean by that?
Yeah, what he means is the way the power comes in. If you look at the spec of that new Honda CBR1000RRR, that's the official name. Basically, the new Fireblade, is the way they've got the power is they've made the engine rev. The standard bike revs, which means the rev limit for the race bike is correspondingly high, 15,600 RPM. That's high for a 1 litre four-cylinder. The way they've done that is to make the stroke of the piston shorter and the width of the piston wider. So it's the bore and stroke is unbelievably what's known in the trade as over square. So what you've got is an 81 millimeter wide piston that only moves in the bore 48 millimeters or 48.7, I think, to be exact, which means it revs, which means you can make power. The problem is that that power generally comes right at the top of the rev range in the last, most of the power comes within the last probably about 5,000 RPM, which, you know, 4,500 RPM on a bike that can rev to 15,500 RPM is a peaky bike. The problem for Honda is they haven't had a lot of dry track time and testing to get to grips with the way the power comes in and do anything about it with the electronics and setup.
There's a feeling in the paddock, James, I don't know whether you agree, that first of all, why did Honda come back? And some people are saying, because they've, in inverted commas, got MotoGP wrapped up now, which is arguable, actually, because Marc Marquez has been injured, obviously, over the off-season.
Yeah, he's saying he's struggling, yeah.
And seems to be struggling. But let's just say that is the theory, that they've got MotoGP wrapped up, now they can invest again in World Superbikes. That's one point. But do you then think the other manufacturers have almost felt they've had to up their game now? Because it just feels like BMW, Yamaha, Kawasaki was already basically a MotoGP team in the Superbike paddock. But it almost feels like everyone else has had to up their game because of what Honda's done.
I think you're right. I think everybody has upped the game. But I don't think it's necessarily just because Honda have come back in such force. I think it's just taken a little bit of time for people to realise what they could do and what they needed to do to make a competitive bike. What's not to like in the racing we saw at Phillip Island? It's just fantastic stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a table this year of the best races and I'll update it as we go through the season. For me, I'd say the best race of the weekend was probably the first one because it was the excitement of the first race of a season. You had the reigning world champion failing to score. Nothing against Jonathan Rea, obviously. But from the title point of view, the championship point of view, it makes it very interesting, doesn't it? When the guy who's dominated everything so many times hasn't scored. But it's great that he's come back and got two podiums.
Well, I mean, regardless of that, I think you're dead right. I think it was, the anticipation was more for the first race. It was good to see that as the first race. For me, probably more in terms of really close, there were close action throughout the whole weekend in all three Superbike races. But I think probably race two or the last race of the weekend, more bumping, more boring,
that's true,
more excitement,
that's
more
true,
people on the grass, more arms waved, you know, so I think that was probably the one for me.
We've seen two almost unbelievable saves defying the laws of physics this weekend. Jonathan Rea across the gravel at the top of Lukey Heights when he got that contact with Tom Sykes, and the jury's out on that one. Quite a lot of mixed opinions in the paddock and
I think
online
they've sorted
it
out between themselves now anyway.
Yeah, which is good, isn't it? They've obviously had a chat last night, Saturday night. But even so, that's sorted out. But even so, what a recovery from Rea. And then Loris Bass this afternoon at the outside of Stoner Corner, twice he's gone across the grass at high speed there.
It was a little bit unlucky because the first time he was right on the outside. What he's trying to do at Stoner, which is a fifth gear left-hander full bore, tyre sliding at the rear, left-hander going into a heavy braking zone and then the slowest corner on the track, which is a Honda hairpin, a right-hander. He was trying to set up the outside line and get a good run around Stoner to put him on the inside and have a chance at going up the inside on the brakes into the hairpin. But the first incident when he was punted onto the grass, he was on the outside of, it was a third of the three riders. The inside rider sat up and then I think Alex Lowe's on the inside of him sat up as well and he was just punted off. The second time, he was on the outside trying to do the same thing to Toprak Raz Gatlioglu and Toprak's bike gave problems and he sat up immediately in the corner not knowing that Baz was there and just shoved him so wide, bounced him across the gravel, then back onto the grass and looked like he was going to head for the airpin and wipe people out when he got there, but he saved it really well. I mean, his stick ability was incredible there.
Stick ability, yeah. Shame for Tenkata, though. I thought they were going to get a podium this weekend. I really did. I mean, he could have even been in contention for the win in that one.
Yeah, and it was for a fair amount of the race. What I would say is, disappointing in terms of results, but I think they'll take a lot of positives away from Phillip Island as a team.
Yeah.
Tenkata are a really savvy team. We all know them from running the Honda, major Honda, their main Honda squad for years. But they're also really skilled tuners, manufacturers of aftermarket parts, and just clever people who know how to put a bike together. And I think they'll come away from Phillip Island thinking, you know what, we're on our way here.
Quick thought for the riders who were unable to take part in some of the races this weekend. Leon Kamier, first of all, That's a bit worrying, actually. I don't know quite how bad that is for Leon. I really hope they can get it sorted, but I think he's in a bit of a mess, isn't he, with that left shoulder and the tendons and the ligaments and the damage there.
Yeah, he's had a couple of three operations on it, as far as I know, and he keeps knocking it up, and that's unfortunate. It happens in racing. Mm. And now he knows that he's got to have a little bit of time off and let it heal, because if he doesn't, it's never going to get right. Really problematic joint to hurt is your shoulder. It once one of them that once you've knocked it properly, it never seems to be right.
Yeah. You know? Garrett Gerloff, Eugene Laverty, they both suffered concussion earlier on this morning. Laverty, as our colleague Charlie Hiscott was saying, they sort of come over the hill, don't they, from Lukey Heights down to the hairpin. And it looks quite slow, but it just shows you when they come off how quick they
It's not. You're going over Lukey Heights, fourth gear, that is third gear on some bikes, depending on your gearing. But that is, well, it's 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then you're breaking down to perhaps about maybe 45 miles an hour and down through the box. But you over Lukey Heights, you've not got a lot of weight on the bike because you're going over a big crest. You're turning left hard, and then you've got to stop the bike and turn it right. And there's not a lot of time to get your braking done, and he got it just slightly wrong, and it didn't half slam him down on the ground.
Gerloff, of course, the other one. What a great debut this weekend, generally. Yeah. Really strong. First time at Phillip Island. Les Pearson actually was saying to me that all the free practice one sessions on a Friday morning this year, they're not going to do anything on the setup. They're going to keep it exactly the same, because that's going to be all about learning the circuits for Garrett. But he was harpooned, wasn't he, at the hairpin this morning by Sandro Cortese.
Yes.
Missed his braking point. But that was a really, really nasty looking accident.
It was. It's always the case. When you get punted by somebody, it's always you that comes off worse, not the person who punched you.
Yeah.
Or generally the case anyway. So he's really unlucky, concussed, airlifted to Melbourne Hospital. You can't read anything into when somebody's airlifted from a British circuit. You always think, oh no, that's going to be a bad one if they've had to airlift him. But actually, at Phillip Island, because it's so far away from Melbourne Hospital, the nearest big major hospital, it's just easier to airlift him. It's a lot quicker flight because they can go straight over the bay. And they can be there in sort of 10 minutes.
Yeah, Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, isn't it?
Yep, so unlucky for Gerloff. He's been impressive, particularly in the wet. But he's got a lot of learning to do this year. This isn't the only circuit he hasn't been to. He hasn't been to any of them.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big challenge. Because the only ones he's going to know now are, from a little bit of testing, are Jerez and Aragon and Portimao. But yeah, certainly he hadn't even set foot on a European circuit until he went to Aragon for testing in November. Back in a minute then with James, and we'll go through a few of the tweets you've been sending in. Thanks for those to JimWit69 and Greg Haynes TV. But first of all, let's just catch up on what's happened with British Superbike testing, because they are this week in Jerez, but last week at Monte Blanco in Spain. And I caught up with Motorcycle News sport reporter Josh Close, who was there to get the latest from British Superbike testing. So, Josh, where do we start? Ryan Vickers, maybe, because he, I reckon, is a real showdown contender, isn't he, this year? He's on the Lehighty Racing RAF regular and reserves Kawasaki, learning year last year, a bit unlucky with some injuries, but looking good, I think, in testing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. Ryan Vickers definitely caught the eye of myself and a lot of other riders in the paddock. He finished third overall on the last day, but he was actually in the top six all 3 days at Monte Blanco. And the difference was between him and a lot of others is they were focused on long race runs and they were not having any problems with their tyres. So he told me towards the end of the second day that he was having no problem at all on the tyres. And at the same time, even though he wasn't trying for a lap time, he was still finding it.
Right, that's interesting, isn't it? So they were pushing for race runs, but he's ended up putting a good lap time in anyway. I mean, what was he, a tenth or so? Yeah, just a tenth down, wasn't he, on Tommy Bridewell, who topped the session?
Yeah, he was on the he was chasing down the Ducatis all 3 days, really, and he feels really comfortable on the bike. He's happy to be in that team for a second season, and he told me he really understands the feeling of the Kawasaki now. So when they make changes to the bike, he can then see that immediately when he goes out. So the connection is definitely there for the second season.
Right. Okay. Nice. Well, that's exciting. I reckon he's going to be in the showdown. Let's see. Obviously, Ryan Vickers had some nasty incidents last year. He had a crash at Donington. He had a crash at Brands Hatch as well. And incidentally, some modifications at Brands Hatch
over the winter with the barriers moved back at Clearways and a few other modifications at Cadwell Park as well. Okay, that's Vickers then. That's going to be interesting this year. He's definitely one to watch. A lot of people, though, Josh, for obvious reasons, talking about Storm Stacy with GR Motorsport, the youngest ever BSB rider. He's only going to be 16 years old when they line up at Silverstone.
Yeah, and what a story that is, you know, before a race even starts, to be 16 years old and in the BSB paddock is quite something. But I think he's going about it in the right way as well. He finished the test, you know, only 1.7 off Tommy Bridewell's time. But I was out on the track during the day. I was between turn 2 and 3, I think it was, and Storm Stacy was actually there watching the other riders go around because he was having a problem at that turn. I think he was telling me he kept hitting the same bump over and over and he couldn't work out why. So he'd actually taken the time to go down there, watch the other riders and learn. So that's already a really positive sign that he wants to learn. He wants to do this in the right way instead of pushing too hard.
And does it seem when he was chatting with you there on the service road at the side of the track that he, you know, he can recognise what people are doing differently and then apply that himself when he's next back on the track?
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way to me. I mean, he was pointing and showing me things whilst I was stood there saying, that's what he's doing different, that's what he's doing right and I'm not. So he seems like he's got, you know, it's a clever head. He knows what he's doing here and he's not going to try and over-impress and make a mistake and hurt himself, because of course that's the big risk for a 16-year-old going into BSB.
Yeah, and I suppose the big thing there with him and with Brent Gladwin, who obviously heads up the team, there's no expectation as such, is there? It's not like people are expecting them to roll up at the first race and win the thing, or, you know, even be on the podium. I guess a points finish is going to be more than acceptable at the moment. It's just all about learning this year.
Yeah, it's all about being in that mindset. And as you say, yeah, they're not a team that consistently challenge, you know, the top six or anything like that. So he knows that he can just take his time, build up his confidence, learn the tracks on the superbike, and then take things from there, because, you know, he's 16, there's a good few years ahead of him yet.
Yeah, you think so, wouldn't you? That's really exciting, actually, to see what happens. And we saw some good 16-year-old performances in Australia as well, didn't we, this weekend with Jan and Ju and people like that in World Supersport. So lots of young talent up and coming. What else grabs your attention, Josh? Anything else? Any other particular teams or riders who you thought, oh, I better watch them this year?
There's a lot going on. Everybody was, you know, really excited to be back, trying out new bikes, new parts. One team in particular was the Rich Energy OMG Racing team. They switched from Suzuki to BMW this year. They've kept Luke Mossy on, and Hector Barber has also joined the team. And now those two were in the top five and very close to each other in pretty much every session. So that's already a positive start for those two. And speaking to Luke Mossy already, I think I spoke to him on day one, and he told me already that he felt so much better on the BMW and that it was essentially better in every way to the Suzuki, but in a good way.
Right, okay. That's interesting. Well, we know what a good chassis that bike is, don't we? How well it turns. They say the same in World Superbikes, don't they? That's, I think, I don't know what you reckon, Josh, but to me, that's always a good sign. I know it's only testing, but when you've got the two teammates so closely matched, you have to think they are getting the most out of that package, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, they were both really happy with it. Hector Barber, especially because, you know, he was on the Kawasaki last season, but it was never really his bike. He was telling me and he felt uncomfortable on that because he couldn't find his setup. Whereas now with the BMW already, he feels he's at that point. He loves the engine. And he says it's an easier bike to ride, which is really interesting. But I'm sure those two will certainly be pushing each other on this year, which always helps the team out.
And what's it like at Monte Blanco? I've actually never been to Monte Blanco. Is it quite an easy place to get to? And also, how was the weather over the few days there?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, actually. And the Monte Blanco circuit is kind of almost in the middle of nowhere, really. Probably about 45 minutes away from Seville. Quite hard to find. But once you get there, you know, it's just...
Do I get the feeling you may have got lost?
Yes, we on the day one, we did get a little bit lost. The signs to the circuit took us away from the circuit instead of towards it.
Oh, that is classic Spanish road signs, isn't it?
It is. We ended up actually picking up a local guy from the village, and he guided us there in our car.
Oh, that's nice of him.
Yeah, once we got there, it was the weather was strange. You know, in the mornings, it was quite cold. Then it would eventually heat up. After lunch in particular, it was really hot. But then if we got to around 5-6 o'clock, it dropped back down again. So yeah, it's a really interesting one for the teams and riders to pick the ideal time to go out, because it's either too cold or too hot at some times of the day.
Right, okay.
But yeah, a lot of the teams are actually a bit disappointed because the track surface is a lot different to the BSB tracks. So some of the tyres were only lasting 3 to 5 laps before they were burning out.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it, really? Only 3 to 5 laps. So is that what, due to, yeah, as you say, track conditions more than weather conditions probably this time?
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, the track almost gave instant grip, but then as they, you know, did a few more laps, it was too much grip, so there was none left and burnt the tyres out. I say only Ryan Vickers was really telling me that they could do long race runs, which was interesting.
Yeah, so they were obviously finding something where nobody else was, by the sounds of it. So that's quite interesting to find out what Ryan and Lee Hardy were doing there. Obviously, Ducati's leading the way. Josh Brooks, you have to feel, is the favourite this year with the newly named Vision Track Ducati, of course. It was B Wiser last year, Vision Track this year. That's Paul Bird's team. But it's actually Tommy Bridwell who led the way on the Oxford Racing Ducati. Steve Moore's team, 136.7 was the lap time. I suppose, though, Josh, with respect to those guys, you've got to think that Ducatis are going to be up there. The Yamahas of Taz McKenzie and the fully recovered Jason Halloran are going to be up there. What about the Kawasaki, though? The Massingbird Mundi Kawasaki, FS3 running the official team now. Danny Buchan, they're certainly pushing for him to be a title contender this year. And from what you've told me just before we started recording this, sounds like he's actually very confident.
Yeah, that's right. I definitely wouldn't rule Danny Buchan out this year. You know, he was obviously the closest challenger last year anyway to the Ducati riders. But he's in a really, you know, good place now, not only with the bike, but with himself as a rider. You know, he's telling me he's kind of evolved, if you like, and he's able to work with his crew chief and his mechanics on work, explaining different parts of the bike and what he wants to see improved and things like that. So, and he was telling me the bike is more of an evolution, just building on the little bits that they were missing on last year. And he has a teammate this year, which he was very happy about, because they can obviously push each other and share data and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Lee Jackson, of course, stepping up from Superstock. Yeah, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? They're trying to do with Lee Jackson what Nigel Snuka and Darren Fry and the FS3 team have done with Buchan, and it's obviously worked with Buchan, hasn't it? And I think Darren Fry was down there, wasn't he? I'm not sure if Nigel was there, but Darren Fry was there.
Yes, Darren was there. I spoke to him for briefly as well, and he's really happy with the team and how they're building up together. You know, stability is key, not only in BSB, but all, you know, team sports, to be within the same setup year on year. It really helps the riders out, because they can come into a new season and, you know, they're ready to go. There's no learning process as such.
Yeah, there's loads to look forward to in BSB this year. We've got the new look British Talent Cup as well, so we'll keep an eye on that. I reckon British Supersport's going to be very close with a lot of those old Moto3, the Motostar riders, now in the GP2 category there, which of course races in the same race as British Supersport. What about you though, Josh? Obviously, you're the sports editor now with MCN. It sounds like you are absolutely non-stop. You're covering MotoGP, BSB, World Superbikes, the roads. I'm sure there's a lot more. You must be very, very busy.
Yeah, man of all trades right now. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that sounds like in Monte Blanco. I was obviously working with the BSB guys, and at the same time, putting stuff together for MotoGP preview.
So stay tuned online. You're on Twitter as well, aren't you, Josh? I guess you'll be putting some of the updates on there.
Yes, absolutely will be. At JoshClose7, if you want to give me a follow. But I'll be keeping up to date with not only the MotoGP, but, you know, the World Superbike, British Superbike, and the roads, of course, as well.
There we go then, JoshClose7 on Twitter. Thanks for that, Josh. It's been a pleasure, and excitement with BSB. And just quickly before you go, as I said before, there is testing continuing, of course, now. They're in Jerez right now.
Yes, they've got a two-day test at Jerez. I think last time I checked, actually just before we came on air, that it was Tommy Bridwell up at the front again, which is promising for him. Obviously, Jerez is a completely different circuit to Monte Blanco, Grand Prix circuit. So it'd be interesting to see how the final day goes.
Josh, thanks very much for that. And we will speak with you very soon. Cheers.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
Thanks again to Josh Close there from MCN. BSB, of course, will be starting at Silverstone in a few weeks' time.
Right, winners and losers then of the Phillip Island weekend. Disappointments for me, and I don't want to start with the negative, but the Charles Davies was an initial disappointment, but it looked much better this afternoon in the long race. BMW have been a little bit on the back foot, I feel. And Federico Caracasulo had a bit of a messy weekend as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Caracasulo had a really unlucky weekend. A couple of incidents his fault, a couple not his fault. I mean, getting sideswiped and your airbag suit going off when you didn't even crash is unlucky, not his fault. So he was, a kind of big loser this weekend through no fault of his own, mostly.
For those of you who don't know, by the way, that was the collision he had when Jonathan Rea was charging through the pack in race one. It was a hell of a hit, wasn't it?
It was a big hit. Straight in the side of him at the under hairpin. It was such a hit that the airbag suit didn't know what it was doing and figured out he was crashing.
So that means his arms would have been
locked.
He couldn't
move. Yeah, he's just stuck.
Wouldn't have been able to turn in for Siberia.
In the dummy position. Yeah. Disappointed for... the BMs and particularly Tom Sykes, because Tom looked like he could run right at the front. Big tyre issue. He'd chosen a tyre that just didn't work in the first race and just never really got going in the other two races, considering he was on pole after the Super Pole session and looked like he could be right at the point. I don't know what went on. I'm sure we'll find out in the fullness of time. Really disappointed for the riders who couldn't take part. But overall, I think it was a winning weekend for most people concerned. It was brilliant, brilliant racing. And for the championship, it couldn't get any better.
Moment of the weekend for you?
I think moment of the weekend for me was the very end of the first Superbike race. Four of them going over the line together within about, way less than a second.
Yeah, it was the second closest finish in World Championship history. The first one was Monza 97, I think we said, didn't we?
Yeah.
And the fifth closest finish between the top two, 0.007 of a second. There was another good moment in that race as well, wasn't there, at the Southern Loop when, was it Vandermark? I'm trying to think who it was now. I think it was, somebody got sandwiched between, I don't know if it was Lowe's between the two Yamahas or Vandermark in the middle there, but there was such a squish going on.
Yeah, but there was loads of that. I mean, there was just tons of that.
Reading had a very good debut as well. And I know Phillip Island is, as we keep saying it, not a gauge for the season ahead, James, but you already feel that Scott Redding is playing the percentages game and banking those points.
Yeah, Redding knows he can ride the bike. He's got to learn how to manage the tyres a little bit better, in his own words. He knows most of the circuits, clearly gets on well with the team, clearly enjoying himself. So, brilliant start to the season for him.
A few tweets then. Ryan Lilly. Hi, Ryan. I don't think I'll get over that. Back in, into Siberia. And he's talking about Toprak, the way he backed it into Siberia. He makes all sorts of shapes with the bikes he rides, doesn't he, Toprak? And incidentally, amazingly, he's become the first rider ever to have won a race on a Kawasaki and on a Yamaha. But he just seems to find the space. We talked about it in commentary, didn't we? Very, very touches people.
I think even more so with the Yamaha. I know we haven't seen much of him on the Yamaha yet, and things could change, but he looks like he can ride the bike to his and the bike's limit without going over the limit, if you know what I mean. He looks out of shape at times, but doesn't run wide much, doesn't hit people much, finds space where there isn't much space. I'm really, really impressed with Toprak. Seems to have a real sense of where he is in the race and where people are around him. As I've got to say, does Scott Redding. Got a sort of sixth sense for that.
One of my favourite tweets of the weekend was from David Greaves, who tweeted us overnight, actually, between Saturday and Sunday. I can't tell you just how much I want him to win. He's actually talking about Tom Sykes. When you see people shouting at the telly when the football's on, that's me with the bike racing, sat on the edge of the city. Come on, lad, come on. And then he's dropped back again with a laughing emoticon.
I'm assuming he's a Yorkshireman.
I would imagine it. It sounds like it. It sounds like you almost, doesn't it? Come on, lad, come on.
It does, yeah.
That was an amusing one there. There's been so much enthusiasm, though, hasn't there, on Twitter across the weekend. A lot of people, of course, back in Europe, waking up or staying up very, very early. But we needed that variety, didn't we? I'm just wondering now, as we look ahead to Qatar in 2 weeks' time, are we going to have a similar pattern? Because the Ducati was making everybody look like they were standing still on that straight, wasn't it, at the end of last year?
Yeah, but do you know what? That might be a good thing. That might make it even closer, because the Honda, we know the Honda's going to be quick. We know the Honda is at the beginning of its development and probably not the best thing to ride as yet. So that might just help Alvaro Bautista and Leon Haslam. I think I'm looking forward to Qatar and thinking this is going to be another good one.
What about World Supersport? Is this going to be a walk in the park for Locatelli this year? Because he's
what,
come
he's,
in. I mean, that was
so impressive.
Remarkable.
I mean, nobody's been anywhere near him in any of the sessions, any of the qualifying or the race. He just cleared off.
Talking of disappointments, by the way, sorry to sound a little bit negative here, but that was a bit of a disappointment. Randy Krumenacker, wasn't it? World champion, throws it down the road. But weird situation. They did seem to hold them on the grid for a long time.
Yeah, they held them on the grid for the maximum. It's between... they can bring the starters orders for between 2 and 5 seconds, as you said, quite rightly. It was at least 5 seconds, in my opinion, or it was 5 seconds.
We'll have to count that.
I tell you what, when you're sat there with your engine revving against the rev limit,
yeah,
that 5 seconds is a long time.
I bet, yeah.
It feels a long time. And yeah, it went and then stopped and then went again. It was a scrappy start for him. That put him on the back foot. The start wasn't even good, even though he went. He'd stopped by the time everybody else went. So it was a bad start and an edgy one as far as if it was going to get a penalty. He must have felt that. Went into turn one too quick. Panicked, got out wide on the dirt and went down. Unusual, he's not a crasher, isn't Randy? But yeah, really bad start to his campaign.
Quick word from you on BSB, because I'm sure people will be interested to hear your opinions this year. I'm just going to throw a few people in there. Obviously, we heard from Josh just before there.
Yep.
Storm Stacey, first of all.
Yep.
Very young guy. He's going to be the youngest ever rider to start at a BSB 16, race
yep.
at 16.
Yep.
Loads of puns going around about can he weather the storm and all the rest of it on yep. Twitter, which is all very amusing. Great stuff there. But what should we expect from him this year? And also, what should he actually be expecting? Because I'm guessing it's a learning year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be a learning year. He's risen through the ranks pretty quickly. The team, and this is Brent Gladwin's team based up there in Sheffield, they were going to have him on a stock Thau. But then the way things happened and they lost a sponsor and then got another one and they thought they'd give Storm a tryout on the Superbike. And this is in Spain. He went really, really well. Didn't go sort of quickest, but he went quicker than they thought he would and thought they'd give him a chance. He wants to do it. And they don't have too much pressure put on him. They said that if he can score a couple of points, you know, early on in the championship and maybe get a couple of top tens towards the end, they'd be more than happy. They understand that he's a young man at the very beginning of what could be a really decent career. But he's a talented kid, I think, he's Storm Stacey.
And do you agree, as we said before, that Josh Brooks has got to be the favourite going into the championship at this stage?
For me, yeah, he has. I don't think he's going to get it all his own way, but for me, he probably starts as just about the favourite, yeah.
Christian Eden's obviously got a really good opportunity this year.
Yeah, Eden's been in the championship a long time, been on the BMW for a long time, needed a change. He's been a little bit lucky in that he has managed to throw his leg over the what you would consider the best bike in the championship and become Josh Brooks' teammate at the PBM on the PBM Ducati. The plum ride. I mean, he got the ride that everybody wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm a really good mate of Christian's. I really rate Christian. But this is the year he's got to perform.
Thanks very much, James. Been a pleasure across the weekend. By the way, special thanks from me to all of the Full Throttle team back in Chiswick. Marcus, Dan, Pete, you're all tops. Pete in particular, Pete Burton on the Eurosport team, actually did a bit of work for us while he was on holiday in the States the other day, James, because we had a bit of a technical problem. So thanks very much for that, Pete. And don't forget, everyone, to subscribe if you can to the podcast. And you can listen back to the archive of podcasts over the last 2 years as well, on all your favourite platforms. James Whittam, we've had Australia. Qatar's next. What's happening for you between now and then?
Usual stuff for me. Back to Yorkshire. See if the house has been washed away. I'm having a bit of a laugh with that, but it isn't funny. Some people have had it a lot worse than us. Everybody's had it fairly rough. And other places in the country. So,
Storm Hawke is going on at the moment, isn't it, over there?
Yeah. So thoughts to everybody who's had issues with the horrendous weather we've been having back in the UK. Other than that, getting ready for Qatar, really, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks very much for that. Thanks to Charlie Hiscott as well. If you were watching on the programme across the weekend, good job there, Charles, with the grid walks. And James, I'll see you again then in a commentary box in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening to Full Throttle. We will be back next Monday as we continue to get excited about motorbikes. But from James Whittam and Greg Haynes, bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.